Dr. Sabrina Dent is president of the Center for Faith, Justice, and Reconciliation. She is an interfaith, social justice, and human rights advocate with a focus on how race and religious freedom issues impact African American and other marginalized communities. Dr. Andrew Whitehead is an award-winning author and scholar whose books include Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States, and the forthcoming American Idolatry, How Christian Nationalism Betrays the Gospel and Threatens the Church. Welcome, both of you, to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you.
Andrew, let's start with you on some definitions, because this is a contested term. Mm-hmm. What falls within the idea and the term of Christian nationalism, and what is just faith and trying to love your country as best you can?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And like you said, it is really important in this moment as the term becomes a little more contested and for some wanting to take it and use it in their own ways or just to say it can mean anything. So in our work, the way that we understand Christian nationalism is as an ideology or cultural framework. And so these things include narratives, value systems, histories, and understandings about what the country should be. But this particular ideology is saying that all civic life in the U.S. should be organized according to one particular expression of the Christian faith. And this Christian faith, this particular expression, is very conservative, both religiously and politically, and ethnocentric. So it's more than just, historic theological teachings or religious beliefs, but there's a number of cultural assumptions that come along with Christian nationalism. So one is a strict moral traditionalism based on maintaining social hierarchy. So who's at the top of society and who comes in the middle and who's at the bottom? A comfort with authoritarian control. So meaning that the world is chaotic and we need the right people in power to either through the threat of violence or through violence to maintain order. And then two, a desire for strict ethno-racial boundaries around American identity and national belonging. So when we're talking about a quote unquote true American, this generally means white, natural born citizens, Christian citizens. And so it really does privilege the white Christian experience in the U.S. And so when we're talking about Christian nationalism, it's just so important to understand that it's a very particular expression of Christianity that wants to be privileged over all others. And so, again, this doesn't mean that conservative Christians or Christians by and large can't take part in civil society or vote or bring their values into the public square, but it means that theirs shouldn't be privileged and it shouldn't limit the opportunity and right of other Christians, non-Christians, people who have no religious faith at all, to also have an equal seat at the table.
Yeah. Dr. Dent, I wonder if you could speak into that, because that last point feels really, really important.
Yes. I actually was thinking about when Andrew was talking about the social hierarchy piece of it, right? Like that to me is a critical point that needs to be made and understood. The social hierarchy, of course, like the ideology itself is very problematic and makes even life more complicated for people of color and for marginalized communities. That includes also the LGBTQ community. And so, when you think of this host social hierarchy, I also think of historically how things have played out in the United States when we're talking about religion, when we're talking about religious freedom, who has the right to live, to thrive, to be, to exist, right? Who has a right to even speak for God in public, right? Because that is a major question that people need to think about. So it puts a lot of different communities in a place where we are minimized, undermined, as well as our rights. And the social hierarchy piece is important because it comes into play when we're thinking about actually the human rights or the civil rights of these many different communities that are often targeted by Christian nationalism. And that shows up in many ways. It shows up in conversations about reproductive access, reproductive justice, reproductive freedom. And I'm being very intentional about using those different words because they have different meanings for different communities. As well as the fact when you think about even conversations about public schools, right now I'm in the state of Virginia. And so Governor Youngkin put out some policies, some model policies that are right now under public comment for people to either support or oppose whatever they choose to do in that, which I oppose them. So I think it's important to think about that, because the complexity for this and the reason why I'm focusing on this particular example in public schools is that public schools are places that supposed to serve everyone, where everyone is supposed to be welcome. There is no religious privilege that's supposed to be in public schools, right? That separation of church and state is so important in that space, right? That government should not prefer one religion or a non-religious community over another. And yet, these policies speak to a certain set of beliefs and ideologies that people may hold. Now, I want to make it very clear. I'm not suggesting that Governor Youngkin is a Christian nationalist. I want to make that very clear. I'm not saying that. But these policies are very problematic because they go in the direction of, again, a set of certain beliefs. And so when people in the public square, the general public, who are not having academic conversations about like Christian nationalism, don't really see examples of how this translates into the public square and has impact on our children. When we hear conversations about that are framed in ways that become attractive to some communities, such as school choice, right? But well, really, when we think about voucher programs and everything, that they were actually designed in the 50s and 60s to defy desegregation orders, right? People didn't want their children going to school with Black children. It's like we have to look at it now to see how does that play out in the 21st century?
Yeah, I mean, one of our guests in the second segment will be Reshma Saujani, who had her book banned 2 weeks ago by a school board. So this has real implications for freedom of expression, as well as everything you've just talked about. I wonder if we just can maybe bring the lens back a little bit. I think it's historical context is so important. Everything that both of you have just talked about, Christian nationalism, we're seeing it kind of balloon up. I honestly, like, it feels like the last 4 months we've really, I mean, obviously, both of you have been talking about this for a while. It's becoming part of the public conversation, but it's not a new thing in American politics. It's not a new ideology or anything like that. Andrew, you've kind of written the book about this. Can you give us a short just timeline of what we're, so that we can understand what inflection point we're actually at right now?
Yeah, definitely. So I think a lot of what we see today really is a result of the rise of the Christian right in the 70s, which was responding, as Dr. Dent said, to civil rights movement in the 60s, both, growing, feminism movement, but also, desegregation and equal rights for Black Americans. And so the rise of the Christian right was responding to that. And I think a lot of, you could say, the flavor of what we see today is from that time and that period. But as you also point out, that has roots earlier into the 20th century. And that period has roots into the 19th century and, through Civil War. And that has roots going further back. So even before the founding of the U.S., we see how Christianity and supremacy for a particular group, generally white Christian men in the United States, has been intertwined. And so this country and society is built for and should work for a certain group of people. And this is how God has designed it. So if we look at Manifest Destiny, and this idea of taking over land or trying to make sense of why it's okay to enslave people that were taken from their homes in Africa, these things are a part of that narrative. And so that history is with us. And so it has shifted and changed. But really what we see today, I think, is a result of a lot of the work of the Christian right in the 1970s.
Thank you. I want to turn now to the elections that are coming up, because we're seeing this come. People are embracing a Christian nationalism mantle in a way that seems shocking to us, given the reverberations that this comes from a long history of oppressive ideology and the fact that people are embracing it. I'm wondering, Sabrina, if you can talk a little bit about like how you're seeing that come up in where Virginia and other states around the country, that Christian nationalism is a contested term, but some people are embracing it. What does that mean?
Yes, some people are embracing it. They're embracing the ideologies. I think if you have sophisticated speakers that have the funding, that have the messaging, the messaging that they've had for a very long time, right? They've just finessed it a little bit better to put it out to the public. And so if you put your language in a way in which it appeals to a certain group of individuals that are not really, I don't want to say sophisticated, right? Because these are sophisticated individuals, but I'm talking about those that are receiving this message and choosing to believe the lies that are being put forth, then that appeals to them in terms of as it relates to the ballot box, right? That they are taking this messaging and saying, oh, well, this was said by this particular elected official, and I believe it. And I think also to go back to Andrew's point about history, right? We can't overlook history. What's happened is that the landscape in America is changing. The religious landscape, as well as the cultural, ethnic landscape of the United States is changing. And people feel threatened. They feel like that there is not space for all of us here in this country. And the reality of it is, there is. There is. It's just that.
Thank you. Amen. Yes.
There has been a narrative that has made people feel as though if someone else receives this loaf of bread, I won't have any for my family. And that's not true. The bakery can keep baking. Right. And so
I'll put on my pastor hat and say that's actually not Christian. Like, that, you know, we can all have a loaf of bread. We're all equally able to enjoy the bread. So I thank you for saying that.
Absolutely. So what happens is that messaging gets translated, and at the ballot box right now, what we see on the federal level is that we've seen that our elected officials are not willing to push hard enough for voter protection in this country. We watched that happen in January. That is very problematic, and it is very concerning to me as someone who does vote, as someone who knows that my ancestors were challenged by that. And I'm not talking about far, far back. I'm talking about my grandfather, right? There is a narrative about my grandfather even being challenged at the polls, even after he paid the polling tax, right? So I think that it's important for people to think about that. But yet, the restrictions that are put in place are really targeting minority communities, because minority communities see that we have a lot more stake for our lives, and we're trying to mobilize even more. And I'm talking about across the spectrum of minority communities, right? But so that's what you see happening in the public square. And again, what's happening right now is what I see is that people are having a stronger commitment to mobilizing people of faith. That's what my organization has been doing. Like, we've been a part of some impactive training campaigns where we've been notifying people, reminding people to get out and vote. Even on our social media campaign in the state of Virginia, because the deadline to register or update your registration is October 17th. So we're reminding people, hey, check your status. If you're not registered, register. And then on top of that, check your polling place, because there has been a lot of redistricting happening in this country. And redistricting is a voter suppression tactic.
I'm Paul Rauschenbusch. My guests are Andrew Whitehead and Sabrina Dent. Democracy, full democracy, is not necessarily a friend of Christian nationalism. And I think you've written eloquently that actually democracy is not exactly an aim of Christian nationalism. I wonder if you could speak into that. And then I would love for us to get into something we both saw on Twitter today about this is like such an amazing tactic of like that the term Christian nationalism I'm reading it from a press release about how the term Christian nationalism is being used to suppress voter turnout among Christian conservative voters. Yeah, I know. I wish everybody could see Dr. Dent's face right now. But anyway, Dr. Whitehead, can you talk a little bit about, like, I put a lot in that question, but that's like, there is a lot going on here about, first of all, Christian nationalism and its relationship to full democracy, and also what we're seeing right now as a tactic of those who are going to use Christian nationalism. It's a very kind of familiar tactic. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. So I do think, you know, with Christian nationalism as an ideology, and when we survey the American public, we do see that the idea of the United States being a Christian nation and that it should elevate particular moral or political concerns as, you know, Christian and the right way to go. This is what God's design is for the country. And so people internalize this and then feel as though we have to ensure these come to pass because God has demanded it, essentially. And so when you legitimate a certain political viewpoint in the will of God, then no matter what stands in the way, even if it's democracy itself, then that should be taken away. Now, this isn't saying that Christians shouldn't take part in the political process. We should, but we have to play by the rules of democracy and all say that we're going to play by these same rules. Because if we don't, then one group, you know, can come in and say, well, this is just what's going to have to take place. And so the real threat here that we see is that when we survey the American public in one recent study that we had, those that embrace Christian nationalism were more likely to deny that voter suppression is a problem. They're more likely to say it's too easy to vote. They're more likely to believe that voter fraud is rampant, more likely to support a civics test for the right to vote, which echoes Jim Crow laws in the South. They would support laws to disenfranchise voters who might have a criminal record. And we know that the criminal justice system is skewed towards against minority populations. And so, again, there's undertones there. And so the real threat
Not
here,
to mention, we can't just completely ignore the Christian nationalist symbols of January 6th and the use of violence to undermine and overthrow an elected government.
Yeah, for sure. So I was part of a report from the Baptist Joint Committee and the Freedom from Religion Foundation that highlighted the connections between Christian nationalism and the January 6th insurrection. And we see, so Christian nationalism wasn't the only, or maybe not even the most important, but it was a very clear part of the story of January 6th. And we see that Americans, how they understand what happened on January 6th is shifting and changing as we get further away. For those that embrace Christian nationalism, they're more likely to say we shouldn't prosecute those that rioted at the Capitol. They're more likely now than they were soon after the insurrection. And so it's reshaping how even we're understanding political violence in our country. And those that embrace Christian nationalism are more likely to say, hey, if democracy doesn't return the results that I want, then we should do away with democracy itself. And so like you mentioned, Paul, with the Family Research Council and one of their town halls that they're sponsoring, I believe it is there in Virginia, coming up when they're saying that Christian nationalism is just about trying to suppress Christian conservative voters. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Just to be clear, it's the use of the term Christian nationalism the way we are correctly defining it. So it's not right. Christian nationalism itself. It's us talk. Just us talking about this is suppressing white. I don't know if they said white, but that's what they mean. You know, white Christian Christian conservative voters, which, you know, we need to speak right into that, Andrew and Sabrina. I would love for both of you, just like, that is such an outrageous claim.
It is. It is. I can't say it enough, right? We have to look back at history and see how history brought us to this point, and that there were actors along the way that were a part of continuing to build this narrative. I think about even the agendas. So there's a documentary that I often refer to as American Heretics, The Politics of the Gospel. And in there, there is a clip with Jerry Falwell, and they're at this convention, and Jerry Falwell says that there are three things that we need to do. He was like, we need to make sure that they get baptized in Jesus' name. We need to make sure, I can't remember the second thing, but I remember that it was like, go, we got to get them registered to vote, to go out. Like, that is, there is an agenda. There has always been an agenda there. And so that agenda actually, again, it disenfranchises so many marginalized communities. And even I'm thinking about the indigenous communities that, you know, and how, or even the case with the Kennedy versus Bremerton case, right? And how Christian nationalists, people are like, no, the coach has a right to pray. Well, what if he was of a different religious identity, right? I don't even think it would have made it that far. What if he was non-religious? And some people say, well, that's not what we should look at. No, we do need to look at that. Because when I think of Christian nationalism, when I think of religious freedom in this country, again, I raise the question, whose religious freedom? Who has the right? Because as soon as some of our visible identifying markers show who we are, the narrow changes, the rules change. And right. That is, and that has been the nature of the United States.
Well, and you've done so much work on this. Religious freedom for who? And with the Black church, like, what does it mean for, you know, religious freedom for the Black church right now around mobilizing voters? Religious right. freedom for Jewish community around abortion?
Right.
You know, there's a lot of ways that this is, you know, I want to make sure you get a chance to plug your great conference that's coming up, that everybody, it's going to be online. People can get up and register. Can you mention again what that is about and what you're hoping to accomplish there?
Oh, absolutely. So October 27th through the 29th, the Center for Faith, Justice and Reconciliation has partnered with so many incredible organizations, including Interfaith Alliance, also Union Theological Seminary, and a host of other organizations that have joined with us. Even I want to mention this, the National Council of Jewish Women, Shoulder to Shoulder. So you have a Muslim and Jewish organization that has come along with us to host this virtual conference where people have the opportunity to get a better understanding of how religious freedom needs to be reimagined, right? How the ways in which Christian nationalism, what we're talking about today, Christian nationalism has been used to infringe upon the rights of human beings in this country. But even with that, we have to recognize what our rights are and recognize that we have a responsibility to uphold those rights and protect them, not just for ourselves, but for everyone. And in so doing it with respect. So our conference is titled Reimagining Religious Freedom, Rights, Responsibilities, and Respect. We have a host of incredible speakers, including Dr. Aubrey Hendricks, who is at Columbia University. He wrote the book, Christians Against Christianity, How Right-Wing Evangelicals is Destroying Our Nation. Paul will be featured as one of our presenters for the panel, as well as Amanda Tyler. We have Michael Vasquez. But here's the thing. We recognize that when we're talking about religious freedom in this country, that we can't just talk about it. We have to take action. And our thing in this conference is to introduce people to the terms that we're talking about today, like Christian nationalism, to help people unpack religious freedom in this country, but also to find the organizations that are doing work and align themselves and work with those organizations, elevate the work that they're doing, and then you as individuals to take action. So we have centered the voices of LGBTQ people in this conversation. We have Black and Latino women that will be a part of the conversation. We have people that that are identified in this country as religious minorities. Why? Because this work takes all of us, and we cannot have these conversations without any of us. I wish we had more room at the table to have everyone there.
So. It's a remarkable conference, and I think we're getting to the end of this conversation. But I could go on and on and on with both of you, Andrew. What Sabrina was talking about, like, we need to take action. We need to, you know, this. It's great to understand the terms, understand the history, but we're making history right now. Each of us, it's up to each of us to make the future history right now. What are some practical things that each of us can do in our own lives and in our own communities, both around voting, but also just in our religious communities, in our, you know, in our civic life? What are things that you've seen are effective in some ways dismantling the power of Christian nationalism as it exerts itself in local and national ways?
Yeah, that's a great question. And two, one that it's great to be a part of a number of different groups and seeing the work that, you know, Dr. Den is doing and Interfaith and BJC and all these different groups coming together. So some things that I think of is similar to thinking short and long term. So right now, democracy is under threat. There are efforts in different states to limit who has access to the vote or just to make it harder. If we, you know, the idea is if there's a couple more hurdles than maybe those that are, you know, on the margins or disenfranchised, they won't be able to get to the polls. And so that, I think, flies in the face of not only true democratic ideals, which as Americans we should be a part of and desire, but also Christians. If you are a person of faith, wanting everybody to have a voice and play a role, I think would be important. So the short term is getting yourself registered to vote and taking part in that process, and then ensuring that hopefully you can help others. So opposing those efforts to limit the vote or partnering with organizations that are on the ground that are doing that hard work. It is difficult work, but supporting them as you can, because I think that's the real threat we're under right now. I think the long term is more of the, you know, the changing hearts and minds, but we can't focus on that right now because that takes too long. That's long work. It won't happen for it won't happen quickly. And so we have to do the short term work of defending the right to vote, access to the vote, but then the long term work, too. So having these discussions, seeking out books and listening to speakers, and particularly so as a white male, for me, listening to the voices and reading the books of those who are outside my experience. I think that's one of the key ways that white Christians can start to wrestle with some of what we've been handed within white Christianity in the U.S. And try to learn. There are very different expressions of Christianity, and some for those that have lived on the margins, they're closer, I think, to the center of God's story, because Christianity has always been with those on the margins. And so in the United States, a place of kind of triumph and victory, you know, Christianity has, I think, in some ways been abused in that sense of what it can mean. And so hearing those voices, I think, is key. So pushing outside those boundaries of what maybe you've been handed growing up, and then learning from those, empathizing with those folks, and then following, you know, where they're saying we should go, following and trying to support their access to democracy. And you know, Dr. Jamar Tisby, he said it a while ago, and it always comes back to me, is for Christians, widening kind of our vision of what Christianity is. It's not just white Christianity, but that there's so much we can learn from each other on what this faith is, how it can be lived out. And again, it isn't that Christians shouldn't play a role in democracy. I don't see how you can be a Christian and not be active in democracy and the world around you. But who is it benefiting? Is it so that all can flourish, or is it just that a particular group can flourish or maintains privileged access to what our society can and does offer? So I think the gospel is about a common flourishing for all folks. And I think that's what we should be about.
Dr. Den, can you give us the last word on what we can all do right now to be helpful, to let democracy flourish, as well as all the people flourish?
Right. I'm honestly say what you can do right now is you can register to attend this event. I honestly would say that because I think that what Andrew pointed to in terms of listening to the narratives of the people that are marginalized by these experiences and really getting a deeper sense of the impact of it. Take action, register to vote, right? Be engaged in your local community. That's what you can do. So you can go to our website, faithandjusticerva.com, to learn more about this upcoming event. But as I have conversations, Andrew is right. It's going to take a long time to change hearts and minds, but the conversations need to happen. People need to understand that one of the things that people might see as something simple for them is actually more a burden and a hardship for another community, and to really understand that. And I have my own narrative about, you know, the redistricting that took place in my hometown when someone simplified, well, the polling place is now only one more mile away. One more mile is significant when you don't have transportation. And yes. So like things like that, people need to be mindful of, and mindful of the nuances and the experiences of people. And then I want to add this last thing in is that, you know, Andrew said Christianity has always been with the marginalized, right? Because we've always been oppressed by it in some way, challenged by it, and sometimes shaped by it, depending on who we are. But we have to remember that every, especially people of color, are not a monolith. And so every person of color is not a Christian, right? And so like, it's important that people understand that. And I think that's part of the conversation that also needs to happen with Christian nationalism, and to marry that with the honest truth of the fact that it's white supremacy. Right. It's white supremacy. And we have to name it. We have to be able to speak it. And we have to be able to be uncomfortable with the discomfort and that we feel in having these conversations, because they're real, because many lives are at stake. So people do need to take action, go to the polls, and be active in your communities. But listen to those when they're speaking their truths about their experiences in this nation.
Dr. Sabrina Udent serves as president of the Center for Faith, Justice, and Reconciliation. She is an interfaith, social justice, and human rights advocate. Her public scholarship addresses how the intersections of race and religious freedom issues impact African Americans and other marginalized communities. Dr. Andrew Whitehead is associate professor of sociology at IUPUI in Indianapolis, where he co-directs the Association of Religious Data Archives in the Center for the Study of Religion and American Culture. He is the co-author of Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States, which won the 2021 Distinguished Book Award from the Society for Scientific Study of Religion. His new book, American Idolatry, How Christian Nationalism Betrays the Gospel and Threatens the Church, will be released in August of 2023. Thank you both very much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.